Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 570, Emily Guy Burkin, author of End Financial Stress Now.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Do your finances stress you out? Welcome to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. I suppose if they do, in some way, that's why you're here. And no doubt, money is one of the top leading causes of stress in our lives, and our guest today wants to address it head on. Personal finance writer Emily Guy Burkin is here, and she's got a new book called End Financial Stress Now: Steps You Can Take to Improve Your Financial Outlook. And very action driven, whether you're stressed out by your debt, your lack of retirement savings, or insufficient income, or all of the above, Emily is here armed with practical and actionable advice for all of us to help us improve our money lives. Here's Emily. Emily Guy Burkin, welcome to So Money. I don't know why it's taking me till now to have you on the show. We're pals. We go back to FinCon. You're just a prolific writer, and I'm excited to share with everybody now your latest book, End Financial Stress Now. Yes, please. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, your new book is so timely. It is important now because we have a lot of uncertainty in the market and with the new presidency and a lot of economic changes that will maybe happening down the line. When you talk about financial stress now, what are the hot stress issues that you're tackling?
Well, one thing that I wanted to do with this book was talk about financial stress at every level of income, because a lot of times the sorts of books that you see in the personal finance realm are very clearly geared towards, the two incomes or, higher income families who are just having trouble figuring out how to make it work. And I wanted to kind of address the money stress that people feel at every level. So, the family that is, trying to make ends meet working, at a poverty or level or just above it, all the way to, the new college graduate who's just never made a budget. And then those two income families that, they've always been able to make it work because they make a lot of money, but, because of a downturn or something like that, circumstances change and they don't know how to change with those circumstances. So I wanted to kind of address the issues that cause financial stress, no matter what income level you're in.
When we're talking, say, about that college student who never developed a budget, what are his or her specific stresses?
Well, often the stresses are, based on not knowing how to plan far enough ahead. So, the specific stresses for college students, you see a lot of college students who are graduating without being able to find a job. And so, of course, that is incredibly stressful. And then a lot of times the problem is we deal with stress in ways that is counterproductive. So someone might, graduate, not be able to find a job and be so stressed out that they engage in retail therapy. And we call it retail therapy for a reason. You get a boost when you buy things. The thing is, that is objectively the worst thing you can do if you don't have a job and you don't know what your income is going to be. And, you've got plastic, you can put it on plastic and be like, well, I'll worry about it later. So, that's the sort of thing where I want to try to dig into, people's stresses, because we tend to think of money as being very simple, dollars and cents. It's math, so it should be black and white, should be very easy. But money is much more than just math. There's the psychological component to it. There's the emotional component to it. So I want to help people kind of dig into those psychological and emotional components to figure out why they're doing what they're doing, and what needs they're trying to meet through these counterproductive, issues that they're doing.
And your book not only identifies the stresses, but also the solutions. If you have debt, what's the solution? Is there anything new to add to this, to the solution?
The thing with financial issues is it's a lot like, the types of advice you see about dieting. What you have to do is simple, but not easy. So, to dig your way out of debt, what you have to do is simple, spend less than you earn and send the excess to your debt until it's paid off. That's very simple. It is not easy. So what I want to do is try to help people find ways to make it easier on themselves to do that. So, some of those things are like, what is it that makes you feel good that you can spend money on? Now, obviously if it makes you feel good to buy a Porsche, every other year, that's not going to be a great idea. But if you kind of identify the little luxuries that that can, keep you sustained in all the other austerity, and the ones that really do help. So, for instance, I know a woman who gets a manicure every month. It's just a little luxury, and knowing that she's going to get this manicure every month helps her to be able to cut other expenses that don't matter as much to her, that don't feel as luxurious to her. So that's the sort of thing where if you really spend time and think about, what do I value? What really fills me up and makes me feel good, that gives me the best bang for my buck? I can, invest in that. And then it's a lot easier to cut the other things like lunches out or coffees or cable or the other things that don't fill me up as much. So the austerity doesn't feel quite so austere.
So I like that. Start with what you love, non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you're
feeling good about your mm-hmm. lifestyle as opposed to feeling like, oh, everything has to go. I have to eat tuna fish out of a can like I did when I was in my 20s. Your previous book to this, interestingly, was about retirement. And it seems like mm-hmm. you're almost like taking a step back a little bit and saying, okay, there's retirement, but before we can really, as the title of your book says, choose your retirement, we have to first kind of deal with the now and the present.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I notice a lot. We have this tendency to have kind of like binary thought processes about retirement. We think of it, look, there's two parts of life. There's work and then there's retirement. And so, you know, in retirement, you'll finally be able to get to do the things that you love to do and everything will be wonderful and perfect and you can go golfing every day and all of that. And there's a real problem with that kind of thought process. For one thing, you fall into the trap of assuming it's going to be retirement charming, which is a term that I've borrowed from Vicki Robin, who wrote Your Money or Your Life. She calls it job charming, where you're expecting something to take care of everything in your life. You know, you can finally be happy because you've reached retirement charming. And in her case, she talks about, you know, the job that will do everything for you. But just as there's no prince charming, there's no retirement charming. You're not going to suddenly be a different person after you retire. You're going to have the same problems, the same things that make you sad, the same issues that you have during your life while you're working. So I wanted to kind of look at how do you create a life that has purpose, that you value, that feels good, no matter where you are in your life, because whether you're working or retired, it's all your life and you deserve to feel satisfied with it no matter where you are.
How did you get into personal finance writing, Emily? I've known you now for several years and we just sort of accept that we're all these financial geeks and we just, you know, love talking about savings. And but for you, what was your foray into financial reporting and writing?
It's kind of one of those I fell into it stories. My father was a financial planner, so I did grow up in the industry, and I've always been a bit of a financial nerd. Like, you know, I remember him telling me when I was a small child you should aim for a modest tax return every year or tax refund every year. You know, it's just stuck with me because I've always been a bit of a financial nerd. Then in 2010, my husband and I moved while I was pregnant with our first child. I had been a high school teacher. And because we moved during the summer and the baby was due in September, I knew I wasn't going to find a job teaching. So I started looking for some writing gigs that I could do. I've always written on all kinds of different subjects. One of the first jobs that I landed was with PTMoney.com. He was just looking for someone who would be able to write about money. And I, you know, let him know that I am kind of just a general money nerd. I'm good at research. You know, I do have a little bit of background in the financial industry. That worked out really well. And, things kind of just continued to snowball from there. Philip Taylor, who's behind PT Money, passed my name along to his friends and, you know, here it is 7 years later and I'm a personal finance author. So it's been an odd, career that I never intended or expected, but I absolutely love. I've always been very interested in the sociology and behavioral economics aspect of personal finance, like why we do the kind of insane and irrational things that we do. And then that kind of is married to the fact that I'm also just very interested in dollars and cents and investing and, you know, just you know, taking care of money is something I've always been interested in. And so it just kind of worked out perfectly for me to have this unexpected career.
What would you say is your financial philosophy? What's your overarching money mantra, Emily?
There's two aspects to it. The first is to really figure out what you value. If you figure out what you value, then you can have the life that you want. You know, we have this tendency to believe that you have to have all the money in the world. You know, you have to have, you know, millions of dollars to be able to live the life that you really want. But you could live very, very well, live the life that you want with very little money, as long as you know what you value and you spend your money on the things that you value most. So that's the first part of it. The second part is to always do something today that you'll be glad you did tomorrow. So always be thinking of yourself in the future and what you'll be glad to wake up to tomorrow. Because it's very easy to get so focused on the present and, you know, like, well, if I do this now, it'll feel good now, but you know, it's going to cause me a problem because I'll have a huge credit card bill next month, or I'm going to be taking money out of my 401k, or you know, anything like that. So those are the sorts of things that I really hammer on is try to remember always that you are going to have to deal with your actions today.
You talked about your childhood growing up, and you had these influences such as your dad working in finance, and you always had this sort of affinity for saving and money advice. But that begs the question then, do you think it's in your DNA, or do you think that you've also picked up some interest just because of your environment?
That's a great question. I've wondered about it quite a bit, because I am different from others in my family. I mean, no one in my family is, you know, like bad with money or anything like that, but I'm the only one who, you know, would be sitting there counting all the pennies out of my piggy bank and just having a grand old time. And I do know that my great grandmother on my mother's side was really excellent with finance. And if she'd been born in a different time, or if she'd been a man, she would have gone into the financial industry. But because she was a woman in the 30s and 40s, it was not open to her. But she had some of the same kind of habits that I do. They talk about when she passed away in the mid 70s, they were going through all of her belongings, and they found over $4,000 in various different purses that she kept, because, you know, this purse was for gifts. So she had money set aside when there was a wedding or a baby was born to buy gifts. And this was set aside to give to the grandchildren. And so that's the sort of habit that I have that, you know, otherwise, if it weren't for knowing that my great grandmother was like that, I wouldn't know where it came from. There have, however, also been, you know, some, nurture influences on me. Just in the right out of college, I moved to Columbus, Ohio. I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland, and I did not have any family near me. And so I was learning how to budget on the fly by myself. And so some of the things that I did and learned then really influenced the way I view money.
Your biggest memory of money as a kid growing up, I've so far heard about you, you know, having these really interesting conversations with your dad, counting your pennies out of your piggy bank. But what was like a really pivotal experience that you had?
When I was about 6 years old, I won a savings bond at an elementary school fair. And I was so excited about this savings bond. I think it was for $25, and it was going to mature when I was about 15. So I was so excited about the savings bond. I was saying that I was going to, you know, take my mom out to dinner with it and buy things for a homeless family and buy myself a bike. And so I had these grand schemes because I didn't have any sense of how much $25 was worth. And so that was something, you know, my parents thought it was hilarious that I, you know, was spending it in so many different ways. But I remember it kind of really stuck with me that their amusement and I had this understanding that I was missing something, but didn't really know what it was. And that really stuck with me.
It reminds me of like any college student who gets that first job out of college and you're making zero, and then you're suddenly making, you know, $35,000-$40,000. And that's $35,000-$40,000 more than you ever had. Suddenly you're thinking, I'm going to get my own place. I'm going to get a car. I'm going to get a new bag, shoes, clothes. No, you're really only making about $25,000 after taxes. And then, you know, rent is about half of that. So yeah, it's just funny how it's perspective, right? And if you don't have anything and then you suddenly have $25 savings bond, you're a rich person. What did you end up doing with that money?
You know, I think it ended up going towards college. You know, it wasn't much money, but I had that, and that savings bonds were really big in the 80s, as I recall. Like that was something like grandparents would give every year. And so when I went off to college, I had about $1,000 worth of savings bonds, including that one, that ended up being my spending money for my first year of college.
Nice.
The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/SoMoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/SoMoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/SoMoney. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
I think I also got a savings bond from some Rotary Club when I was like in fourth grade. And I remember thinking I will be able to do nothing with this ever. And I'm not even sure where it landed. So that's the difference between you and me. But I should have done, I don't know. I was like, but this is, I was confused. I'm like, but is this really money? Like, I don't, I think I just had a hard time delaying gratification because, you know, you have to wait to redeem that money. Did not work for me at age 8, whatever it was. Emily, tell me a little bit about your biggest failure. I there's got to be a failure in you, right? There has to be some kind of financial regret, setback, whatever you want to call it, but that you learned a lot from as well.
Well, I think when I was 20, let's see, I was 22 when my grandmother on my mother's side passed away. I'm one of her 6 grandchildren, and she had a provision in her will that each of the 6 grandchildren would get $10,000. So I decided at the time, and as I mentioned, I've always been a writer. I really wanted to be a novelist. So I decided I was going to live off of that $10,000 for as long as I could, and try to make a go of it with writing. And I was thinking, at the time I was working part-time at a bookstore, and I was also doing, an AmeriCorps volunteer program. So it was going to be $1,000 a month for 10 months. I was going to be able to use this for, and, you know, be able to focus on writing instead of worrying about making this money. And that was not a good use of the money. It really, $10,000 was a lot less money than I realized. I mean, I could not live on $1,000 a month. At the end of it, you know, I didn't have any more writing under my belt than I did before I started. I mean, I was already, you know, doing a little bit on a daily basis, but, you know, it wasn't like, you know, all right, after 10 months, I've got a manuscript I can send out. So, I do regret that use of the money, because I feel like I could have done something a lot better with it. I could have put it aside for a down payment. I could have, I didn't have any investment in retirements or anything like that. I don't want to say I'm glad I did it, but it taught me a very important lesson about understanding just how far money goes.
Well, you also got a book out of that time, right?
No, I had a manuscript. You know, I've written a couple of novel manuscripts, but never, it didn't really give me the time that I needed to get it polished to where I felt like I could send it to agents or publishers. So not exactly. I think I would have been in the same place if I had just continued working the way I had been and writing the way I had been.
This is your fourth book. How has the process evolved for you? Looking back at the first time you wrote a book versus this last one, this most current one, what have you learned?
Well, I really do love the process of writing a book. That's something, you know, I've talked to other people at FinCon, other people in the personal finance sphere. And I think that is not common for people to really love the process. I have learned that I really, you know, similar to not realizing how far money goes, it's really hard to know how much time you need to do something. I really have been getting better at figuring out how long I need to write a book. I think I'm going to always struggle with that, because you always end up finding out things that you didn't realize you needed to know somewhere in the middle of the process. There's always going to be a day where I've got 2 kids, where somebody's sick on the most inconvenient day possible, that sort of thing. So, but I have, I've really learned that I need to, take my time. I need to clear my schedule. And I need to just kind of respect that the process is not quick or easy. But it's going to be something I just need to go through step by step.
So many people are struggling to have enough for retirement. And that was the subject of your previous book. Can you give us some advice on, let's say we're in our 30s, 40s, and we haven't really done a whole lot to save for retirement? What can we do besides just funneling more money to a 401k? I mean, that's obviously part of it.
You know, the main thing to do is, you know, well, I'd say the first thing to do is forgive yourself, because we have this tendency to really shame people for not starting earlier. And I understand why that happens. Like, you'll never hear me say that you shouldn't be saving money or that you shouldn't start as early as possible. But because we beat the drum about, you know, start saving as soon as possible, you know, and if you can, go back in time and save more. I mean, we so emphasize that people end up feeling like, well, it's too late now. I might as well not even start. And then they get kind of paralyzed by it. So the first thing is to just forgive yourself, you know, like it's okay. I'm starting now. You know, the past is past. It just is what it is. Deal with the situation as it is now, not as it might have been. So that's like the first thing. Now, again, like you don't forgive yourself to the point where like, and I don't need to start now either. No, it's more about like get to the mindset you need to be able to actually put the money aside. So, you know, and for a lot of people that mindset is just the stumbling block of how many steps it takes to, you know, start putting money aside in your 401k. I mean, there are a lot of people who don't necessarily put money aside just because, you know, they have to go down to HR and they need to get the forms and they need to do this and that and the other. So, you know, recognizing this is going to be a multi-step process and, you know, breaking it down into like, okay, on Monday, I'm going to go to HR. By Tuesday, I'm going to do this. By Wednesday, I'm going to do that, is also really important. And, you know, making sure that you break down the steps and then automate as much as you possibly can so you don't have to think about it is going to make this easier. And I'm all about making money decisions as easy as possible for yourself.
That's a great way to tackle it. Like give yourself some measured steps, because certainly it can feel overwhelming. And I really also like the advice of not making yourself feel worse than you probably already do feel, and realizing that you're not alone. I mean, most Americans, sad to say, don't have anything saved for retirement. It's not even a little bit. They have nothing, which begs the question, are we just going to reach a point where we don't even think about retirement anymore because it's just too hard to achieve this idea that you're going to be able to not work and have money to support yourself?
Well, and something to remember is that the idea of retirement as we think of it is relatively new concept. I mean, that our great grandparents, you know, did not think of retirement as a possibility until like the late 1800s, early 1900s, you basically worked until you were so sick you couldn't work anymore. And then you went and lived with family. And that was it. It's only really our parents and grandparents' generation that were able to have a retirement, which, you know, you work until you're about 65 or so, and then you get to enjoy yourself and have some leisure time. And the thing is, things have to change. I mean, the reason why that was the way that retirement was viewed for so long is because we were able to have retirements like that. The world is changing. The economy is changing. Our lifespans are getting longer. So things are going to change and our expectations of retirement need to change with it. And as long as you are willing to roll with those punches and try to aim for that values-driven life at any point, it's going to be a lot easier to change with those expectations. Because if you go into your working life with the expectation that someday I don't have to work anymore and I'm going to be able to do fun things that I always wanted to do and love, you're going to resent the idea that retirement is no longer an option the way it was for our parents and grandparents. So just being able to build the life that you love at all times is going to make it a lot easier to roll with those punches.
That's right. It's so much of this is just shifting the way you think about these concepts, whether it's debt or retirement or feeling fulfilled in their careers. Let's do some so money fill in the blanks. This is this part of the show where you finish a sentence that I spew out really fast. Okay.
Okay.
If I won the lottery tomorrow, the first thing I would do is
buy a car.
Oh yeah. Not so happy with your car right now.
My husband is an automotive engineer, and so he and I kind of bonded over cool cars, you know, throughout our lives together. Right now, I'm driving a 2002 Honda Accord that's automatic transmission, and I miss manual transmission. I miss something a little more sporty, a little more fun, and I'm too practical. Even though, like we could potentially buy a new car for me, I'm too practical to do that. But if I won the lottery, I would want to go out and get something sporty and fun. And
are you more like a Tesla person? Are you a Lamborghini person? What kind of car?
Oh, well, that's a tough one. I probably, because again, my husband is an automotive engineer and he's kind of a car geek. I'd probably get something a vintage. My dream car growing up was a Porsche 911. Now I might want to be interested in a BMW from the late '80s, early 90s, in that really boxy era. I just love the way they look.
There you go. All right. So let's transition now to splurges. If the one thing that I do splurge on, so this is not if you win the $1 million, $10 million, whatever, you know, Powerball currently, even though I know you're probably more on the frugal side, but when you do splurge, I like to spend my money on
office supplies.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're all Staples, Container Store, Amazon. That's your jam. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a stationery geek, you know, so I love really nice pens. For some reason I cannot keep Post-it notes to save my life and I'm always buying more. I used to joke when I was a high school English teacher that I did it for the school supplies. I became a teacher just for the school supplies.
Did it for the supplies closet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I love office supplies, organizational supplies, those sorts of things. But yeah, and I spend kind of a ridiculous amount of money on them.
So what is a good pen? That's probably the most boring question I've ever asked in my life, but I'm curious, what is a good pen?
I really like the kind that have kind of a thickish black ink. So like they're Sharpie makes fine point pens that are basically like their markers with very fine points. Uh-huh. Those were my favorite until I found the Micron pens. These were recommended to me by someone who does scrapbooking, but the Micron Pigma pens are same sort of thing where it's like a marker with a very fine point.
Oh, I see.
They're just a joy to write with. And then I also, I draw as well. And so I like to draw with them. They just make a gorgeous line. And just the ink is wonderful.
Oh my God. You're getting very excited talking about these pens. And I just looked them up. There are 6 pieces for $8.32 on Amazon right now with your Prime mm-hmm. subscription. And yeah, they look fun. Mm-hmm. All right. One thing that I spend on that makes my life easier or better is...
Oh, you know, probably our youngest is 3 years old and he goes to preschool at the JCC here in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Every month, at least once a month, I think, we should probably move him to a closer preschool. It's 25 minutes away. So it's kind of a long commute to get him dropped off. And it's not cheap. It's an expensive, prospect sending him because we are members of the JCC and then the cost of preschool itself is pretty expensive. We're spending more here for just him for preschool than we did for both boys for preschool in our previous town. We were in Lafayette, Indiana. But every single time it never fails. The day that I get stuck in traffic or I have to pay the bill and I go, maybe we should move him a little closer someplace cheaper. He comes home having like painted the Eiffel Tower or having learned neurosurgery or something. Or his teacher, he's got 3 teachers. One of them is a young man named Ryan. His teacher will tell us something like, today he said, thank you for being my Ryan. So that's an expense that's higher than we anticipated. But I really do feel like it is absolutely worth it. You know, not just the education he gets there and the Jewish education he gets there, but the community that we are building, with his friends and being members of the JCC.
It's true, right? It's not just the kids who benefit, but the parents, and you really start to bond with the community, and it's hard to let that go. So I feel mm-hmm. that the way with Evan's preschool as well. Mm-hmm. All right. The one thing I wish I had learned about money growing up is?
I wish I'd learned about compound interest. I did learn about it. I remember it being taught it specifically as a freshman in high school, but it didn't sink in. So I wish that had been made much more clear to me about how compound interest is as close to magic as you're going to get in the real world.
Yeah. I mean, no one ever really at the time, as a child, thinks, someone please tell me about compound interest already. I mean, it's not, shouldn't all just be fun and games when I'm eight. But yeah, as an adult, you're like, maybe that would have, but how do you actually tell a young person what it is so that they care?
And that's the question. Cause I, when I learned about it in my freshman year in high school, I remember my social studies teacher, used me and then a boy named Joe as the two examples. And, you know, did that typical thing. If I put aside $100 a month from the time I was 20 to the time I was 40 and Joe started saving at 40, putting aside however much a month, I would still end up with more. So you did that and that like stuck in my head very much so, but it still was just like, I'll worry about it later. I'll worry about it later. It's, I think the trying to find a way to give it the urgency of like, no, worry about it now, worry about it now would have been helpful. But I, to be honest, I have no idea how to make that, something that really would connect with a kid because, you know, I was the kid it would connect with. I was such a nerd and it didn't.
Yeah. So there you go. Maybe it's just something you aren't meant to learn when you're alone.
Maybe.
it's just supposed to be something you learn after you get your college diploma. All right, Emily, last but not least, I'm Emily Guy Birkin. I'm so money because.
Oh, I'm so money because I know how to use my money so that it makes me feel good without having to stress about it.
That's right. And you've written a whole book about that. Congratulations. And so glad to have you on the show. Looking forward to seeing you at the upcoming FinCon. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, that's the annual gathering of financial bloggers and writers and general money nerds. Looking forward to seeing everybody there, especially you, Emily. Thanks so much and have a great rest of your spring.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much to Emily Guy Birkin. Her website is emilyguybirkin.com. She's also on Twitter at Emily Guy Birkin. That's easy to remember. If you missed any of this, be sure to check out somoneypodcast.com. And if you have a question for me, click on Ask Farnoosh at the top right corner, type in a question or send in a voicemail, and we will include it in an upcoming Friday episode of Ask Farnoosh. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and I hope your day is so money. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.